Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Time to elaborate. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is your host, Margaret Marshall, and I want to welcome you this evening. It's a great day. It has been a great day today in my city, and I hope it has been in yours. And as we usually do when we get together in the backyard, I'm going to ask you to take a seat in your favorite chair, whether it was on top of the roof, in the hammock, on the beach, or under the mango tree. We are going to relax and take a virtual trip in your mind to Jamaica, land we love. So although we can't be there in person, we certainly can be there in our dreams. So tonight I'm asking you to just relax and get there any way you can, because we're going to be talking about Monique in St. Anne. And if there are any listeners online or on the board that is from St. Anne, you might be familiar with some of the information we're going to share tonight, but I'll just have you know I'm a Kingstonian, born under the clock, so I had no clue all of this was happening before my time and after my time in St. Anne. So we're going to be talking about the intermittent lakes of Monique, and also the Monique Hotel, which I think is now being used as a university or a college, but it was built way back when. So, as usual, I want to welcome everyone. I hope you are relaxed and you're ready for some labrish about the old time days. So, here I go. And if you're on my list, you will know that I was unable to broadcast last week. And this is the same program that we had scheduled for last week that we're talking about this week. And that is these lakes that just come and go in Monique. And I was talking to one of my girlfriends in Florida, and she happened to know about these lakes and mention, I'm hoping she'll call in tonight and fill us in on a little personal information, but she told me that some of her parents' property was on one of these lakes. So here I go using Dr. Joy Lumsden's material. You know, she's one of my favorite historians. So I found one of her articles on one of her pages. And you can always, you know, check her out on Joyous Jam. Just Google Joyous Jam and you'll get a lot of her material. And, of course, a lot is on Blog Talk Radio and on Backyard Labrish. So I want to take this opportunity to invite you to check out our website, which is backyardlavish.com. So here I go from Dr. Lumsden's page. And the title of her article was The Joy and Sorrow, Lakes of Monique. Twice during the 20th century, lakes appeared at Monique in St. Anne of such considerable size that they could be used as major recreational facilities. On these two occasions, one in 1917, way before my time, and the other one in 1934, time before my time still, there were many accounts in the Daily Gleaner of boating and other entertainment and activities at Monique, and also discussion of the history and origins of the lakes. As well as these positive reports, there were also accounts of more negative aspects, such as destruction of property, the loss of livelihood, the loss of life resulting from the rising waters, which were caused, it seemed, by the heavy rains, storms, and hurricanes of the preceding years. JIS, which for the foreigners who might come by later, means Jamaica Information Services, news release of February 11th, 2006, read, Monique St. Anne, the St. Anne Health Department is warning members of the public not to participate in activities such as boating, fishing, and vending in the Monique Lake area of the parish, which has been affected by rising waters. The Monique Lake is highly contaminated, as several pit latrines have been submerged, pig pens and poultry houses have been washed out, and treatment from two sewer plants is being emptied into the section of the lake. And that was an article by the Chief Public Health Inspector of St. Anne, Mr. Granville McKenzie. Okay, I'm going to take a sidebar now and remind our listeners that one of the reasons I'm sure to try and pronounce everybody's names that's mentioned in these articles, because I have a strong opinion that a lot of the you know, people who are related to some of these names may not be familiar with the things that was done by their forefathers long time ago. Because on several occasions I've had some of my fans mentioned that they may have heard a story about, you know, some great-grandfather that was involved in something. But anyway, I'll be mentioning the names that are mentioned in these articles. Now, I also want to remind the listeners that Dr. Lumsden gets her materials mostly from, you know, the library or some authentic source. So here she's quoting the articles from the newspaper. So we know that this article was in 2006. So here, back to her website. The existence of lakes or ponds in the Monique area has been recorded from the early years of the British presence in Jamaica, although it must be assumed that both the Spaniards and the early Tainos had also been aware of their existence. Stanley's map of 1678 indicates a tortoise pond, and other maps up to the end of the 18th century also mentioned ponds, specifically a turtle pond, and the type is a little messed up, so I can't give you the details of those other maps, but it's obvious that this has been going on way before our times, even before the English took over the island. So it goes on to say, it may further interest your readers to know that in 1723, Mr. Job, J-O-B, Williams of St. Mary and St. Anne, writing to his friend, Mr. George Bosch of Bristol, invited him to come and recoup his health in the garden of the Western Paradise, where he would gather new lungs by inhaling the healing perfume of aromatic plants wafted over the Mansia of the Indians, from whence could be seen the placid waters of an inland lake. And in parenthesis, it's called A Smile of the Great Spirit. Manig is said to be the Manasia, or Monkey Hill, of the Indians. So that was a quote from somebody writing to their friend in 1723 about what they were witnessing in Manig at the time. So it's obvious that these lakes were, you know, coming and going, and were even described with a whole lot of old-time words, how they would use these words to describe things that were beautiful or ugly. And that's part of my intrigue in reading sometimes when she documents or finds a documentation that spoke, you know, like a letter from one person to another. And from what I gather, quite a few people are intrigued with it too, because I must say that whenever we do a show like this, we seem to get a lot of hits. So that was a sidebar, in case you don't know. I'm very famous for my sidebars. So I'll tell you each time when it's my ideas and when we're using Dr. Lumsden's materials. So here we go again. Back to her article. That explanation of the same Manig was challenged by three other explanations given in the Gleaner in 1934. A.S. Biles, spelled B-Y-L-E-S, said that it was probably a corruption of two Spanish words, M-O-N-T-E and A-G-U-A, therefore meaning mountain water, which explanation was slightly modified by G.R. Machado, who suggested that it came from the Spanish word Managua, M-A-N-A-G-U-A, meaning a place where there is water. J.L. Pereza thought that it probably came from the word M-A-N-I-G-U-A, great, which means great storm. And those were all from an article that she wrote, when it's obvious that in 1934, people were trying to decide what the real name of the lakes were and why they were called what they were called. Okay, back to the article. And this caption is the 19th century. The ponds also appeared on maps published in the 19th century, and it is at the beginning of that century that accounts began to appear of occasions on which much larger bodies of water appeared quite rapidly in the area. In 1810 to 1811, a large lake, estimated at some 3,000 acres, developed. Reportedly, the lake covered a very valuable sugar work and other buildings, the tops of some of them still appearing above the water. Much valuable land was inundated, and several other ponds appeared in the surrounding region. On this occasion, as later, canoes and boats were taken to the lake, to afford a pleasant amusement. Another writer referred to the view of the lake from the Walton School, and this is what they wrote. The prospect of such an immense sheet of water, interspersed with small islands covered with palm and other trees, is picturesque and romantic beyond description, and considerably heightened by the abundance of wild fowl skimpering about the surface of the lake. And that's the end of that quote. The vestry of St. Anne sensibly withdrew the parochial taxes on the properties which had suffered from the expansion of the lake. The next appearance of a large lake occurred in 1863-64. According to the plumber, P-L-U-M-M-E-R, the high water level disappeared within 3 days. But another letter written in 1917 by a James A. Marshall wrote of the lake subsiding in the course of time. Before disappearing, the lake had reached depths of up to 40 or 50 feet, a length of some 3 miles, and in places a breadth of almost an eighth of a mile. According to the writer, Mr. Mayes, M-A-I-S, the headmaster of Walton School, obtained a boat, and the boat was called the Lady of the Lake, for the boys to use. The boys also used to shoot wild duck and other birds around the lake. E.C. Smith in 1934 also had recollections of this period, though he recalled the water being at its height in 1875 and disappearing by 1881. On one occasion, he remembered a place called Flash, F-L-A-S-H, apostrophe S, where the boys used to bathe. The headmaster was giving a ducking by one of his pupils and also afterwards claimed it was a mistake. So in other words, sidebar here, the students ducked the headmaster and said, you know, he didn't mean to do it. So they were playing pranks even in those days. Okay, for Mr. Myers, however, the rising of the lake brought tragedy, as it was to do to others later, when one of his young daughters and her nurse were drowned while bathing in the lake. Marshall also referred to the lake appearing again, though not on such a large scale, in 1874. He commented of the scene in that year. A fine picture might be taken from the top of Mount Diablo, looking down on the lake with the driving fog and the sudden appearance of the sun shining on the water. It was a glorious panorama. So that is the first page of all of the descriptions of those folks way back when the lake would come and go. I'm going to take a break now and ask if there's anyone on the board that knew during the time they were growing up in Jamaica of I think perhaps there's some water around there someplace. I am not personally sure because I've never been there, so I don't know. But I'd like to know if there's anyone on the board that is familiar with any of this information or might have been from St. Anne and heard about the bodies being a lot bigger in the old days. So in order to let me know. You'll have to hit 1 on your telephone, which will indicate to me that you have put up your hands as if you were in school. You remember when we were in school and you'd hold up your hand? Well, once you hit 1, that's what happens. Then I'll use my little magic mouse and flip open your mic, and you'll be live on Backyard Labrish. So who would like to talk to me? Please do. And if you're listening online, remember you have to call in, because I'm unable to chat with you, even though I have the ability to chat. But right now, I can only handle the mic. So get on the phone and call me if you would like to join the Labrish. So do I have any takers? I am going to count to 3. Then I can see all the listeners on the board will have to listen to me read Dr. Lumsden's portion again. So talk to me. 1, 2, 3. So I see you don't want to talk. You just want to listen because you're still there. So let's go to the 20th century. In 1917 and in 1934, when the lake or lakes reappeared, in 1917, there was considerable GLENA coverage of the phenomena, especially in its more pleasant characteristics. Both were difficult years in Jamaica. Young men from the war in Europe, no, sorry, I missed a line here. Hold on, let me get my glasses. Both were difficult years in Jamaica. 1917, the fourth year of the World War I, was one of increasing shortages and hardships and the ongoing recruitment of young men for the war in Europe. 1934 was in the middle of the Great Depression, in which Jamaica was suffering economic and social dislocation along with the rest of the world. Cheerful news was at a premium. The beauty of the lake was the first concern of many reports. SAH, which is initials, I suppose, for the writer, in January of 1917 wrote, "It is a beautiful freshwater lake exceeding fully 4 miles in length and an expanse of 0.5 mile. It is the most marvelous thing I have ever seen, and no words of mine can accurately describe this wonder. Extending up to the valley with a great pool of clear water surrounded by lovely hills and palm trees with fern and wild flowers, and along the edges of the banks, I am fascinated." Okay, in June of 1934, another person who is EMN waxed lyrical on the same topic. "The blue skies above, the vast green country beyond is all and more than one can want of beauty on which to feast the eyes, fill the senses and ponder over. The glistening, dazzling sunlight, the rich emerald green, the well-kept pastures that rise up from the valley that is now filled with water, the cradle of picturesque mountains with its green of darker hue, all is marvelously beautiful." So that is how the writers of those times described the lake. So it must have been really something to be fascinated about. So I don't know what it looks like now, but that sounded like it was a big deal. So let me get back to Dr. Lumsden now. And I want to take a minute to remind the listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We are here every Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So, here we go back to, and I thank you for joining me and hope that you'll be here often. As we say in Jamaica, come soon. Oh, is that what you want to say? Walk good and come back again. So here we go again. How one wishes for color photography to preserve these views for us. Unfortunately, the black and white photographs printed in the press at the time totally failed to capture the exquisite scene described by all of these writers. This is Dr. Lumsden's notes. The large expanse of water attracted many to take part in the same recreations as their forebears, bathing and boating. In February of 1917, an advertisement promised rafting and boating on the magnificent freshwater lake, and a report from a Monique correspondent declared, touring by boats, canoes, and bamboo rafts is heartily indulged in by visitors, and thus a regular business is kept up by those who invest in these provisions. The attractions of the lake were utilized by fundraisers for a local hospital who held in Gala Day on Easter Monday. Advertisements for this event, advertisements for this event promised boating on the lake, regatta, balloon race, and sports of all kinds. The function was apparently a great success, though the newspaper report makes no mention of any balloon race. On a more sober note, it must be mentioned that a free ferry had started operation on the lake on February 14th, making two trips an hour normally and four trips an hour on market days. A notice was posted that the barge will not be used for excursions on the lake. The entertainment on the lake in 1934 was similar to that of 1917. Advertisements and photographs promised swimming and rafting and a variety of boating activities, including motor and rowboating, whoopee, and joy floating. In April of 1934, three youngsters from Woolmer's, Calabar, and Micah School set out at 4 o'clock in the morning to cycle to Monique, and they reached at 9:30 a.m. They spent some time swimming, as one of them still remembered when I interviewed him some years ago. They then set out at 4:30 p.m. to return to Kingston, reaching the city at 9 p.m. The Gleaner photograph of them records their trip on that occasion. And I do have it on the website. So if you are listening online, you're perhaps getting a flash presentation. And the picture of these three young men that cycled from Kingston to Monique is on there. I mean, Dr. Lumsden is just wonderful in finding these things and making them available to us. So back to the article. The lakes at Monique even appeared in the Gleaner in a Gleaner cartoon in 1934, about some now long forgotten municipal issues. Six members of the Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation, 3 black, 1 brown, and 2 white were shown urging the unfortunate mayor, who was Sir George Seymour. They were encouraging Seymour to jump into the collegiate lake where a water board is bobbing on the surface. My sidebar, remember, this is a cartoon, so Dr. Lumsden is describing the cartoon. So the cartoon shows these 6 men, I suppose, 6 and 3 and 2, 5, 1, 6, yes. 3 blacks, 1 brown, and 2 whites, 7, I suppose, sitting on a something, and a board is bobbing on the water in the lake, and this is what they're saying to the governor. This is a cartoon, I suppose, it's put up. The cartoonists were very well established in those days. This is what the cartoon said underneath it. The mayor, let me go back, the mayor, Sir George Seymour, had a rope around his neck, and the men were holding the rope. And they were saying, the cartoon was saying, "Jump, Georgie, jump. If you're born for hang, you can't drown. If you're born for drown, you can't hang." So that was, I suppose that was very funny in 1934. But what I think all of this is giving me, and I hopefully the members on the board and those listening online, sort of a picture of how things used to be in those days. You know, that you could hear how the writers would describe the lake with perhaps not the way the words we would necessarily put together and use to describe something of beauty now. And here, even in those days, people were, you know, as Jamaicans, we're always laughing at ourselves, and we're a lot more relaxed, I think, than a lot of foreigners are at banter, you know, when you're just sort of kidding or fooling around. But there is this cartoon, and she has it on her website, so I think you can see it clearer if you just Google the lakes of Monique, Dr. Joy Lumsden, you will get to her side. And it's really funny because these men are sitting behind the governor. He's perched over the deck that goes out into the lake. There is a board bobbing on the lake. There's a rope around his neck, and they're telling him to jump because if him born for drown, him can't hang. And if him born for hang, he can't drown. And I just thought that was hysterical. So that's sort of all I have on the lake itself now. And then we're going to talk about the Monique Hotel and how that got started. So if anyone wants to chime in about all this happening with this, just hit 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me that you not only want to sit in your easy chair in the backyard, but you also want to join the Labrish. You know, Labrish is sort of chatting, not gossip, but sharing information with each other. And you got to share with me. I see a hand. Hallelujah. And I'm going to open the mic for 914-665. Good evening. You got Margaret under the mango tree with a rum and coconut water. Who do I have? Where are you and what are you drinking?
Good evening, Margaret. This is a delight to hear him can't hang.
Isn't that funny?
It sure is. I am Carl from Mount Vernon. And what always, first of all, I'd love to know where that lake, what happened to that lake, because I've never seen or heard of that lake before. But what I do remember is the rafting on the Rio Grande, which mm-hmm. was well publicized and done and used by tourists. And I was always fascinated by the idea of doing it because as native Jamaicans, in my time anyway, never participated or enjoyed that sport, if you wish to call it that. And so I pledged, when I went away, when I came to the United States, I said my next visit, one of the things I must do is go rafting on the Rio Grande. And I recall that we had to take the car. We drove up to the point of the point where we are going to end the ride, and then they took us to the other point by their transportation on the road. And the whole idea is that when the ride is over, you just get into your car and you're on your way.
That's smart.
So anyway, me and my wife went on this rafting experience. And as we were coming down the river, all of a sudden, the driver or the guy who's paddling or moving the raft, he pulled over to the bank and disappeared. And just as it started to rain, I said, "My God, I hope we're not in trouble."
Mm-hmm.
Because here we are, two of us, as strangers, sitting in this raft, and he's gone on his way. And the next, lo and behold, within 10 minutes or so, he returned with a big banana leaf. The whole idea was to provide
coverage. It was an umbrella.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. How cool is that?
And I said, "No, look at that."
You know, it does remind me. I was just mentioning to one of my girlfriends that we did a show on the things we repurposed. Of course, we didn't call it that in those days.
No.
But, you know, that's the word now. Repurpose, you use it for something else. And,
yeah.
But I never thought of the banana leaf as being an umbrella.
A big, lovely banana leaf. You know, it was,
wow.
It was not broken. Very solid banana leaf.
Uh-huh.
And he held it over our heads. Of course, we had to assist in holding it.
Yeah,
and I had him,
I
gave him my camera and told him to take a picture of us under the banana leaf.
Uh-huh.
And it was quite, I don't know where that picture is, but somewhere in my collection I have a picture of two scared, because I really was scared. We really were scared what was going to happen next.
Yes,
until he came with the banana leaf.
And what year was this we're talking about?
You're talking, I would guess, because I was already here, I would imagine that must have been about the mid-60s.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
But you had never, while you were in Jamaica, and I gathered you grew up there?
Yes, but I never, I had another friend, well-known photographer of those time, Amador Packer, did photographs of the rafting, and he usually sold all these Jamaican scenes to the tourists.
Right,
business.
I got you. But had you ever heard of any great expanse of water in Monique?
No, never heard about it. I mean, I've heard of the White River.
Right. Well, apparently these lakes come and go.
Yes.
You know, and as it mentioned in the article, there's really not a whole lot of documentation on how its origins, and that is why Dr. Lumsden has gathered, you know, all of these from the different people writing about it, even in a letter or in the newspaper. But
yeah,
there really doesn't seem to be a lot of information about it even now.
Well, you know, we always had some beautiful scenic spots, including Duns River Falls, of course.
Oh, yes. All of those are well documented.
But there was another.
The thing that's happening in Monique is not one of those, because apparently it disappears after a while, or, you know, it is very little of it is left.
Yes, and there was also another beautiful falls. I don't remember exactly what part of the country. But
if you listen to some of the shows in the archives, you know, because we've done quite a few shows, a show every week, and we've been broadcasting since August of 2008, and all of the shows are done in the archives. And I did a series called Discover Jamaica, One Parish at a Time.
Yes.
So if there was a waterfall, and believe you me, I cannot remember everything, but we covered all the waterfalls, the lakes, where the lakes run through, what the island was known for. So may I suggest that you try and check it out? And if anyone else is interested, you know, if you can go to the Blog Talk page and Backyard Labrish website, you can actually use the search bar to search for, you know, with a couple of words or a sentence or the name of a parish, and you will get directly to the shows that did that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm saying that because I am so excited about the new technology. You know, I'm a techie old lady. I need to be techier so that I can chat with the people listening online, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm working on it.
But Jamaica was always, known for its beauty.
Oh, yes,
unfortunately,
yes.
I think that one of those waterfalls, it was dug down or destroyed because...
That's possible?
They were doing some new development or developing the area.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I forget the name of it now, but I'll think about it on my next visit to your program. I'll be able to tell you the name of the falls. They're beautiful. I've seen photographs.
But remember, you're not visiting my program. You're visiting the backyard. Are you in your easy chair? Are you relaxed? No problem, man?
Yes, without the liquor.
Okay. Well, I just said rum and Coca-Cola, but
well,
I just have to have coconut water instead of the rum. Well,
no,
I want
really
to remind our listeners again that we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock, and I would like to invite the listeners to participate by just going to the website or, you know, sending me an email if you're on my list, and let me know what you'd like to hear about. You know, perhaps we've done it already, or perhaps it's something I haven't done, and I would love to interview some seniors who have actual memories of what their grandparents told them about the area they were brought up, or any stories, their own stories. You know, I make it clear that we're not here for politics or religion or sort of current affairs, because there's a lot of that information already online. What I try to do here is to enlighten myself as well as some other people who may have grown up and left the island around my time. And during the period I was in school, we did not learn a lot about what happened in Jamaica before. You know, we learned about, you know, Penn and Abel and all of those history, but not a lot about the local happenings. And there was a lot of things going on, you know, in the early, late 19th century early 19th century and the early 20th century that was important and was really basically done on the island by people of all different hues from all different walks of life, because I've covered some very interesting stories of, you know, average people doing fantastic things.
And if I may, there is another event that comes to mind. It was a common, I call it adventure, on Christmas morning. You would take the boat at the Kingston Harbor and go out in the ocean. And it was very well publicized, and people always went on that trip. At least I know my family used to go on that trip Christmas morning, early Christmas morning. And we'd go out in the Caribbean Sea and came back. It took about an hour.
You know, I never heard of that.
Yes, and on one occasion, there was a boat called the Zephyr that capsized. What happened is that a child was near the edge and fell overboard. And, of course, everybody got curious as to what was happening. So it's a small boat. And just imagine a lot of people in that boat going to one side of the boat. So the boat capsized, and they even made a song about how the Zephyr capsized over 26
really?
Times. Christmas morning tragedy. And that was another thing that my father used to love. He was quite an adventurer himself. And I remember that particular story.
Wow. No, that's a story I've never heard.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there must be in some old newspaper accounts of that.
Yes. Yes, it was. It was very dramatic, and of course, it made the headlines in the Gleaner.
Do you have any what period was your dad? What do you have any idea when it might have been?
Well, I would imagine that would have been in the 40s, in the early 40s.
In the early 40s?
Yes.
Well, I was alive in the early 40s. I mean, I was born.
Yes.
I was born in 1935, and I was born and raised in Kingston. I don't remember that.
I never heard of that.
Was in your father's, when your father was a young man.
Yes, and of course you remember Christmas Market downtown.
Oh, yes, I remember all of that. We have all of that in our Christmas stories.
As a matter of fact, you boarded, you used to go right to the end of King Street.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
That
and
is
I
where,
used to go
that is where we
right.
got on board.
They used to have the military band down there
yes.
in the gazebo at the Victoria thing.
Yep.
All of that was done on the Christmas shows.
Right, right.
But let's get back to your dad on that thingy there. It has to be, if it was when he was young, it can't
yes.
be 1940.
Well, let me think about
no,
that.
I was young in 1940.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing now, but I would guess between the late 30s to the early 40s,
mm-hmm.
because I'm trying to measure it from my age, which I'm still keeping a secret.
Oh, well, I must say you must be pretty young if you're a dad, because I would be around your dad's age.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
no,
you must be pretty young.
I would love to. I'm sure that if they went into the archives of the Gleaner, you'll find information about that story.
Right, right. Well, I'll certainly try and research that, because that sounds like something of interest.
And the name of the boat was Zephyr.
Zephyr, Zephyr.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
some reason, the name Zeppelin comes up, but I wondered if that was a balloon float or
yeah, that was a
like.
Different thing, but this is
yeah,
a Zephyr.
Right.
Yeah,
I know that it was a Zepp something.
As a matter of fact, there was a cigarette that was popular with that same name.
Zeppelin?
Zeppelin. Zephyr. Zephyr.
Ah. Zephyr. Oh, I got it.
Excuse me. Z-E-P-H-Y-R.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, were you familiar with the Monique Hotel?
No, I remember it, but not very clearly. I know it was somewhere in the Monique. Oh, that's out in Monique.
Oh, it's actually right in Monique where the lakes were.
Oh,
so
I
now
see.
I'm going to enlighten you, because remember, here we're here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. So as I enlighten you, I'm enlightening myself, because most of this material, I courtesy of Dr. Lumsden, I, you know, research, find, print out. But when I read it on the air, so sometimes you hear me stumbling, I'm reading it for the first time, because it's a lot of material. So I'm enlightening myself for the first time. So would you like to hear about the Monique Hotel?
Certainly, I'm delighted.
Hey,
yes.
So here's the Daily Gleaner of April 11th, 1891.
Wow. That's way, way back before my time.
A little before my time. In our issue of Wednesday, we gave a final in intimation intimation. That the new hotel in St. Anne's, established by a company of local landed proprietors and others, would on that day be formally thrown open as now ready in every way to minister to the wants of transient travelers, and to the comfort of more permanent boarders. We also, at the same time, set forth a brief description of the completed buildings and of their situation and surroundings in one of the most beautiful, healthy, and generally accessible locations of Jamaica. VIZ, the Far Farmed District of the Monique, in parenthesis, in the parish of St. Anne. And this is spelled with an apostrophe. Now, she's quoting from the newspaper. That's how they wrote this article, and I'm reading it just as it was written. So I want you to take note of how people described situations and things, because, you know, that didn't make sense to me, but that is just how they wrote it. Throw the doors open. That was a sidebar. Okay, so let me go on further.
Well, I'm glad you identified. I'm sorry, I'm glad that you identified it as in St. Anne's. I couldn't remember where Monique.
Yes, St. Anne's.
St. Anne's. Okay.
Yeah, the article went on to say, we now further note the proceedings that took place on the appointed day. It was a subject of regret that His Excellency the Governor, having a previous engagement to be present with Lady Blake at the laying of the foundation stone of the Trelawney Girls' School, could not be present. But he had visited the building the day before and given his unofficial appropriation to its fabric and appointments. Okay. The absence of the Honorable M. Solomon, spelled S-O-L-O-M-O-N, the Custos of St. Anne's, spelled with an apostrophe, and the representative of that parish in the Legislative Council was sufficiently accounted for. Although also much regretted for the joint reasons that he is not in strong health, but nevertheless is in attendance on his day to his constituents in his place at the Legislative Chamber in Kingston. Period. Full stop. But by 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday, the 8th instant, an influential gathering has assembled for the gentlemen of St. Anne. And also there were present some from St. Catherine and Kingston, who had been invited to attend on the opening day. And all were now duly met and welcomed by the directors present, Mr. Chass, C-H-A-S, Mr. Steer, and Mr. Steer Esquire, Chairman and Messrs. A. Duet, D-O-E-T, O-D-O-U-E-T, A. Roxborough, M. A. Ludley, A. A. Stewart, and A. N. Sutherland, Esquire, the vigilant and most courteous secretary. Among those present were Dr. MacPhail, M-C-P-H-A-I-L, and Reverend MacDuff, Mr. Michael Hart, Mr. French, Mr. Roper, Mr. Constantine Burke, and Mr. Gordon of Spanish Town, representatives of the Gleaner and Gaul's News, which must have been another newspaper, sidebar, F. Roper, of Gaul's newsletter, were also present. And last, though not least, the Honorable J.C. McGlasham, who although highly welcomed as a guest, was also there in somewhat an official capacity, as he is the government commissioner, to be satisfied that the company has fulfilled all the initial conditions by which it can draw the bounty of 3% guarantee on the investment capital, and therefore when other lowland guests had to tear themselves away, Mr. McGlashan remained over the night for the purpose of going with the secretary more in derail over the books and premises, which investigation we feel assured all will not end in an, I can't pronounce this word, UNMAUVAIS, which must be Latin.
Uh-huh.
And it goes on, which seemed to me like they were trying to verify some facts. We'll just leave it at that. And this document is on Dr. Lumsden's side. For the people who might, this information might be relevant if they're using it for something, they can go there and finish the rest of that word, because I think it's Latin, so I'm not able to pronounce it all.
But if I may ask a question.
Uh-huh.
Were these foreign investors who built the Monique Hotel?
Well, that is what I'm finding out. I'm finding out all of this at the same time with you.
Okay.
So apparently it was so. So let's read on. A due interval having elapsed for the arrival of belated guests, the proceedings commenced by a tour around the buildings and an inspection of the general arrangements and a visit to the upper floor and dormitories. Two or three of these last had already secured their occupants for the night, and more of them in advance for this or next week. The others were ready for emergency calls in any possible number. The furniture, although simple, was tasty. There will be, when the exhibition is over, the splendid billiard table now there. Oh, they wrote different in those days.
Yeah.
And we doubt not, for the ladies, an equal first-class piano in the drawing room. There is a resident matron or head stewardess, Mrs. Hewitt, with a staff of female, an equal first-class piano in the drawing room. There is a resident matron or head stewardess, Mrs. Hewitt, no, it's a double print, with a staff of female domestics. All the beds are supplied with a substantium of wire spring mattress, and each room with water from the high pressure cisterns on the roof, which is also a safeguard against the spread of fire. The ladies and gentlemen baths on the different sides of the buildings are also in like manner supplied, and the wastewater runs off by underground drainage down the steep hillside into the hollow at the back of the cutout offices. It will be utilized there in the vegetable gardens, and its screening shrubberies. The tariff of charge was explained. This will doubtlessly be short totally advertised. So we will only say that it is reasonable for the equivalents offered and also within the means of our professionals and mercantile citizens of Kingston seeking rest and recreation, say from Saturday evening to Monday morning, for one can leave Kingston by the last train on the former day and be back to business by 7:15 a.m. train on the latter day, arriving in Kingston at 9 a.m. Now, can you just picture all of that?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
Apparently, the main... the main way of getting around the island at the time was by railway.
That's right.
JGR, Jamaica Government Railway. And it's interesting to note about that cistern on top of the building.
Right,
with
right,
the water.
Right.
Just, as a matter of fact, it ran really by gravity, and it just went, it was never wasted because it went into providing for the garden.
Well, I am just intrigued by the way, this was an actual article from the newspaper.
Yeah.
And the way the writers, you know, whoever writing these articles would describe these scenes.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a meeting or a landscape or something, I just find it very intriguing.
Fascinating, yes.
Oh, my gosh. And I hope the listeners are as intrigued as I am.
But let me go back
to the article now. Listen to how they describe a tour. We call it a tour now. After the march around, including for those who desired it, an ascent by the corkscrew staircase to the roof and turret. So, in other words, they're going up the corkscrew staircase to the roof.
Yeah.
After the article. The guests were gathered in the spacious and well-lighted dining room where the tables were laid out with glittering display of plates, china and glass, and decorated with snowy drapery and choice flowers, ferns, and rare orchids, such as only Jamaica will, perhaps one or two other places in the world, can produce.
That must have been beautiful, though.
Yeah. A sumptuous cold luncheon was then served, a la rosé, a fault we have observed. Rosé, by the tidy expert and male waiters. The wines were of the best, and they were not too highly iced.
Uh-huh.
A fault we have observed at some other elaborate banquets recently held near Kingston. Indeed, the climate at Manig is so tempered and equal that will... No. Let me go back here. All of these flourish words is confusing me. Indeed, the climate at Manig is so temperate and equitable that will I seldom or never be requisite there. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know,
what a lot of words to describe that it was cool.
Well, if I may interject here, I remember that when Winston Churchill visited Jamaica, this must have been back in the 50s, middle 50s, and he was interviewed his only visit actually to Jamaica, and he described it as salubrious surroundings, and he enjoyed his visit so much, and the beauty of the country, and the the very happy and joyful. He just described in simple words about the people. They were so friendly and so on. But the beauty of the country was always spoken about and written about by all these important visitors.
Yes. And I'm assuming at this time, you know, we're talking 18-something, that it was perhaps a foreigner writing
this.
Yes,
that's way back there, yeah.
Right. Okay, back to the article. The altitude is above 950 feet above sea level. The table was arranged high, the form of a T, with the genial chairman, C.W. Steer Esquire, on the outer side of the junction point of the two right angles. That is describing where the man was sitting. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Okay, back to the article. Just having been duly done to the menu, which, by the way, if intended as a sample of what the chef de cuisine can accomplish, will make the Monique Hotel the very paradise of the Lucili of Jamaica. We say, having been done to the more substantial vanads and auxiliary pastry and confectionery, the chairman ordered a charge of heredic, H-E-I-D-S-I-C-K, in parentheses, on which was formally drank, D-R-A-N-K, the royal toast of Her Majesty the Queen. The chairman then ordered a repetition of the charge in honor of His Excellency the Governor. Oh, the cheer. You know when they say hip, hip, hooray?
Hip, hip, hooray.
Right. And in giving this toast, Mr. Steer, spelled S-T-E-E-R, prefaced it with a few remarks. He said that the inception of the idea of erecting an hotel at Monique was largely fostered by the experience of the governor in the Bahamas, and the encouragement he had given in his legislative, as well as personal capacity to the building of hotels in Jamaica. Mr. Steer explained, as we have already noted, the cause of His Excellency not being then present, which he had reason to think would have been otherwise in case. Oh, God, this is confusing. It is needless to say that this, like the previous and all the subsequent toasts, was cordially responded to. The next toast proposed was that of the contractors, Messrs. Worthley, W-R-T-L-E-Y, and Mayas, M-A-I-S, which was introduced by Mr. Sutherland, the secretary to the hotel company, as he had very frequent and intimate dealings with these gentlemen in the process of their work, and he had found them always ready to do everything to meet the wishes of the directors, not only up to, but even beyond the limits of their contract. And as to the way in which that contract had been performed, he, the speaker, might almost adopt the inception in St. Paul's Cathedral in honor of Sir Christopher Wren, its builder. And then he speaks something in Latin, which I can't pronounce. And it's spelled S-I, first word, M-O-N-U-M-E-N-T-U-S, I know what that is, Requius, R-E-Q-U-I-R-I-S, CIRCUMSPICE. At any rate, Messrs. Messrs. Worthley and Mass had completed their contract in a workmanlike and masterly manner. All of that in parentheses. So the phrase is a workmanlike and masterly manner. And he knew that this would be a standing utility, an adornment to the hotel itself. And he hoped and believed that these features would be a good business advertisement to the contractors. In this toast, Mr. C. Mayers, who, with his brother, Mr. E. Mayers, was present, duly responded and reciprocated the permanent prosperity of the company, which with aspirations were ably acknowledged by Mr. Roxborough, who then called for a toast in honor of the visitors, coupled especially with the name of S. Constantine Burke, Esquire, to which that gentleman replied with the easy grace of Forensic Expert, F-O-R-E-N-S-I-C, Expert, although he did not at all appear there in the capacity of an advocate learned in the law, but moderately spoke of himself only as a St. Anne's pen keeper. So that was how he answered that toast. I am just flabbergasted by the amount of words that they would use to describe what seemingly was a simple thing.
Yeah, well, if I may comment, it was traditionally the way that someone would flaunt their education by quoting in Latin, for one thing. And then the name Mays, I think those were Englishmen, well known. I forget, there's another name that goes with it, like it says Stone and Mays. And then similar to Higgs and Hill,
which
was also well known. They also were involved in the construction of the University of the West Indies.
And that, I think that is very very good, you know, connections, because one of the reasons I go to lengths to explain these names or try to pronounce these names or mention these names is that I think it is important in that there are descendants of these people floating all over the world.
Yes.
And people, as they get older, get more interested in finding out about their forefathers.
Right, of course. And then names like, for example, they were introducing a speaker at a function which I attended recently. And this gentleman was, he attended the Michael Teachers Training College in Kingston. And, of course, we know it as Michael, and you know the history because you did a part of it about...
Right, we had a speaker on that at that show, yes.
Of course, but the person who was introducing this gentleman said Miko, and the Jamaicans in the audience corrected him and said, it's Michael.
right.
And so on,
Because people, you know, from certain parts of the world put an emphasis on different syllables.
That's true.
And letters, and we do.
Right.
So it's quite interesting. But, you know, it went on with another speech. But I wanted to give a little bit so people could get the flavor of how, you know, writers put together. Because they didn't have, I'm sure, recordings at the time.
No.
The reporter that was there was just writing from perhaps his notes.
I'll bet it was shorthand that he
Right, right. Pittman's shorthand
yeah.
at the time, perhaps. But you know, he would transcribe, and I'm sure use a lot of his words to describe what they were saying.
That's right.
But I really, really find it quite fascinating. And at this time, would like to invite, I see we have a Skyper in. I always know a Skyper because it's all ones, all zeros. And anyone using Skype know what who they are. So if you would like to make a comment or to join the Lambridge, please feel free to hit one on your keyboard. And I'm hoping that I'll see the same little hand rise up as I do with the other phones. And we also have a 973-373. And again, I must ask anyone listening online to call 718-766-4558 if you would like to join the Labrish. Well, believe it or not, we're almost out of time, and I would like to thank everyone, especially you, Mr. McDonald.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
For joining
enjoy.
Me in the backyard. I hope that, like myself, you have been enlightened a bit.
Very much so.
Serious lakes of Monique, where people taking over 3,000 acres of land.
Imagine.
That is a whole lot of lake.
Oh.
If I may say so.
Yes, oh yes. I can imagine
yes,
the beauty
yes,
of
yes.
that place. I wonder what happened to it eventually. What's the history?
I think there are still some. I saw some recent pictures. I went online and Googled it. And there is, you know, someone put something in Wikipedia about these lakes in Monique. But I don't think there's a body of water, I think. I still see something. And I think up to recently, there might have been some activity there in terms of, you know, something happening, perhaps flooding, extra flooding or something. But I can see that in the early days, you know, that was mentioned earlier when I quoted the dates. There was a whole lot of activities, even entertainment, built around that area.
Right.
So it's quite fascinating. Now, I wanted to just end by reading to you how the day was described. I suppose this was the day of the opening, but it says the day was calm and beautiful in St. Anne. The view lovely and the climate cool and exhilarating. A restful charm seemed to those who came from the hot and toilful plains to hover around the sloping hills and to nestle in the shady trees. Oh, God, listen to
this.
This is not
exotic.
I'm telling you, they're beautiful. Horses, sheep, and cattle
wow.
wandered free within the large stone-walled pastures. The drought all prevalent, showered its traces. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Showed its traces even there. The venture was that of autumn, not of spring. The V-E-N-T-U-R-E, yes, was that of autumn, not of spring. But the sturgeon and the saddle, the turkey and the game that weighed the festive sideboards had known sort of famine, had known not of famine.
Not, N-A-U-G-H-T.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of famine, nor had suffered from the severe hardship of drought.
He's waxing poetic.
We left Kingston at 8 a.m., but were in the exhibition ground by 6:16 and stayed to the fireworks. Oh, this is something they talked about, the exhibition of that year that the hotel was opened.
Yeah.
We had not passed through the Monique for 30 years, and the last time did so from Brownstown. We got into Spanish Town dead beat, both man and horses at 10 p.m. after traveling. So what they were describing was getting back to Kingston after this big hoopla at the opening of the Monique Hotel. Wasn't that fascinating?
Very fascinating. It's interesting to know that in addition to the railway means of traveling, they also went on their horses.
Right. But, and then later on, you know, this was 18-something when the hotel opened. Remember, now we're talking about 1891. I mentioned the date earlier.
Right.
But in 1934, the boys were cycling from Kingston to Monique.
How about that?
Yes, I
enjoy my visits in the backyard this evening, and it's very fascinating. I have been enlightened.
Oh, well, that's our objective. And I'm really so grateful and honored to have you in the backyard with me, Mr. McDonald. I hope you will come back again soon, and I want to welcome and thank all the callers for staying with us, you know, through all of this. I hope you've enjoyed hearing me, you know, stumble through all of this information, because sometimes it really gets difficult to read. But I really enjoyed myself, and I really look forward to my time here in the backyard. I want to thank the listeners listening online and to ask you to send me a note or when you can. And I really look forward to seeing you all next week. So, Mr. McDonald, thanks as usual for interacting with me.
My pleasure.
And I want to remind our listeners that we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock. So if you come by later, and I also want to remind you that all the shows we've done from we started are in the archives, and you can just, you know, check them out, scroll down, look, find one that you like, and you can listen to it while you're checking your email. Just minimize it and listen as you're doing something else. And if it's something you think a friend would like, just copy the URL in your address bar and mail it to them, and they too can enjoy it. So we hope you had a nice time with us, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
And I say, walk good.
So, like I say, you have to join me here, Mr. McDonald. So goodbye from Backyard Lavish,
so
where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Here we go. Land
we
McDonald.
Love.
Land we love. And I say to you tonight, as I say to you each week, make it a great week. Good night.
Good night.